Maybe I can't kill you, but I can make you wish you were dead.
Wait. This isn't what you want. Me without power. This is undignified. Don't you want me at my best? Admit it. You prefer me.
Horizontal? In a grave?
Formidable.
So take my power.
It's cute, but you know that would kill me. Just let me get my purple back, and then come find me.
Everybody, welcome to the Marvel TV cast from Podcastica. I'm Penny.
And I am Jim. And today we're going to be talking about Agatha All Along, Season 1, Episode 1, Seekest Thou the Road. And I'm so excited. Yay! It's finally here.
So what were your overall thoughts and impressions of this first episode?
I'll give you two. Two parallel thoughts. I watched it the first time and was perplexed, I guess is the right word. Maybe it kind of fits a story about witches, but I liked it. I knew that I liked it, but I could not get my head around what they were doing. It felt initially like it was done really well, but I was like, why did they do that? Like, why?
Yeah.
Why did they? Well, how did we get from there to here? And it just, I could not figure it out. And when that's when I started texting you thinking, oh, this is going to be Jim hating on a show, but loving on the characters. And then I watched it the second time. And when I watched it the second time and things started to click, for example, well, without getting into the weeds too thick, I think that when you started realizing what Catherine Hahn was actually doing the first half of the show, and we'll get into that. And I was like, oh, like none of this really happened the way we saw it.
It's all in her head.
We'll talk about the specific. And the minute it all started to click to me, then I was like, holy cow. They figured out a way to parallel the theme of WandaVision, but do it in a really unique and almost perfect Agnes/Agatha way. And the minute that all started clicking to me, and to be quite honest with you, there's a couple of characters I'm super intrigued with that we must delve into in a second. But I just think that they have a path forward. And I have no idea. They talked a lot about a road, and I mean, it's in the theme, right? It's in the title of the episode. So I have no idea where this is going, but they did a great job setting the tone with who this character is and perhaps who the bad guy is in this show. Although there's so many questions, but they're good questions. And initially I didn't think they were good questions. So if you're listening to this podcast after watching it really quickly once, and you're not liking it as much as, like, you're wondering why they did this homage to another show, go back and watch it again and really pay attention, because how they come out of it was just spectacular, which we'll talk about. What about you, Penny? Like, what, I know witches are your, like, I loved, like, doing Buffy with you, because Willow is obviously one of your favorite characters, but what did you get out of this? Like, your initial volley?
I generally try to avoid any kind of pre-information about shows I'm going to watch. But of course, when you're podcasting, it's a little bit your responsibility to look at the trailers and think about, you know, read up the news and all that stuff. So I had enough information ahead of time to know that they were doing a bit about Mayor of Easttown, which is an HBO show. And, you know, as soon as I saw Agnes of Westview, I was like, oh, here it is. Okay, that's what they're doing. And I've seen Mayor of Easttown. I don't remember it very well. It was during my phase when I watched like six of those small town murder drama gloomy shows in a row, you know, like Broadchurch, The Killing. Like I watched a whole bunch of them all in a row. So they all blend together. But I was like, oh, they're hitting all the tropes of those shows. Like, here's the detective. She's had disciplinary problems. She shows up with two coffees for her buddy. And I was like, they're not going to stay in this this Mayor of Easttown spoof. So I'm just going to enjoy how well they're spoofing it. And very early on, I was like, wait a minute. There's a lot of details that I think are going to matter later. So on second watch, I was much more like looking at like little tiny details and being like, I bet that's coming back. I bet that's coming back. I bet that's coming back. I thought her sort of version of the Kate Winslet performance in Mayor of Easttown was pretty dead on and hilarious.
It's crazy how beat by beat, if you watch that show, there's the second episode of Mayor of Easttown is almost beat for beat this show, and the coloring, the cinematography,
the style of it,
the music, it was done better in many ways than, you know, if you consider Wanda kind of the sister show to Agatha. You know, obviously they did a lot of plays on sitcoms and parodies on sitcoms. This was very much in the same vein, but it was done at like prestige television level, which is
because they were mimicking prestige television.
Yes.
Right. They were copying an HBO show, whereas WandaVision was copying network, like old school sitcoms that were like shallow and light and fast, and Mayor of Easttown is like dark and gloomy and plotting, like all of those shows are. They all are. I personally think Broadchurch is the best of all of those.
Brilliant,
but like, you know,
brilliant. I love Broadchurch. A side note: there's two versions of Broadchurch. There's a real version done in England, and then they brought
there's a fake.
But
I never watched the fake one.
If you should, only because you know, our boy is in both.
Yeah, David
he's in both, and it's beat for beat the same. Except with English accents, and it really is kind of a neat, like, it's almost worth like a podcast, like watching episode one and then watching episode one and then watching episode two and watching episode two.
Oh, that would be kind of a fun project.
They're beat. My daughter and I did that, and it was but you are the British version of that show, I agree with you, was fantastic.
It's some of the best of that breed of show.
Yeah.
I also really already am in love with Aubrey Plaza. I have been since Parks and Recreation. Everything she does, she steals the scenes in. And I was like, oh no, who's gonna take the scene? Catherine Hahn or Aubrey Plaza? Like, oh my God. And then when the two of them were on screen together, I was like, oh, it's Buffy and Faith. It's like you get this vibe of like, we understand each other. We hate each other. We love each other. We're equals. We're rivals. It's like all of those things at once.
You know, but here's the twist. We talk a lot about this on the Buffy show. They just never crossed a line on that show. I think they might cross a line on this show, which
there is some sexual tension.
Oh, and it's like it palpit from the second. And it's funny because when you first meet her character, you're still trying to figure out what the heck is going on, but that you could see that in that FBI suit that she was wearing, that like she was trying not to burst out of it. She just wanted the anger and the hate and the passion and that eventually comes out later in the episode. Like you could feel it. And I mean, Aubrey Plaza is good at that. Like she's really good at that. And watching both of them start off so like one who clearly knows everything that's going on and the other one who doesn't.
It's lost. She's totally lost. Yeah, yeah.
Just kind of watching watching Aubrey Plaza spending the episode poking and prodding and pushing. And when she finally gets her in that spot, pulling her back into from Agnes to Agatha. Oh, beautiful.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. All right. So let's start with talking about the delusion. So at the end of WandaVision, Agatha has been beaten by Scarlet Witch or Wanda, and Wanda takes all of her magical powers and traps her in this delusion where she's this Agnes character. And sometime in the intervening 3 years, she has morphed from a sitcom character into a crime drama character. But apparently the rest of Westview is like, well, Agnes is just kind of crazy. And I find that hilarious. Well, that the rest of the townspeople are like, let's just make sure she's fed and it'll be fine.
And what's kind of funny is they said, if I don't have the exact quote, but this wasn't the whole 3 years. This was like a couple of days. Like,
yeah, they're like, lately it seems like you've been bitten by the true crime bug. And I'm like, what set that off, I wonder?
And what else has she done? And will we ever get to see what that looks like? Because,
like, what's been going on for 3 years?
So that, yeah. And so when I first watched it, I was like, why are they doing this? Like, I don't get it. Like, why? They're just trying to, they're mimicking. That's not what they were. Okay. So let's throw the same at them, but different. There was a reason for that in the first episode. And while we didn't know in the first episode of WandaVision why they were doing it, when they tie it all together after the first 6 episodes, it's super clear why they did it. And then this one, this was my problem. Like, I loved it. I loved the way it looked. I loved the acting. I loved everything about it. But I kept saying, why
are we doing
this? Even after they were saying, like, look, we were just kind of going with your kind of, you said it best.
Yeah.
Like, if you just would have said, hey, Jim, there's some delusional things going on there, I think I probably would have looked at it differently. But but I just wanted, there's this one scene. Okay. The big scene, like when she comes bursting out of the door naked and Herb, John, whatever his name is in this, is standing across the way, across his fence line, a fence line that we got to see in parody form back in Wanda. The fence line that we got to see at the very beginning of the show when she walks up with the two cups of coffee. And so as she's the second time I watch this, as she's talking to him over the flowers of the, and his fence line, stark naked. All of those scenes clicked. I was like, holy
that's
the police tape. That's where the police tape was. Oh, none of that really happened. Then it started to make sense. And as you watch all of this.
Yeah, when she walks up to him with the coffee cups, he's like, howdy, neighbor. And then he's the cop. Like, first he's her neighbor. And then it's like the delusion takes over and he's a cop with her. But and the look on his face when she first walks up to the police line is like, what's Agnes going to do today? We never know. And then he's like, he starts playing cop and you're like, is that bad acting? No, that's good acting. Because he's switching from who he is as a character to who he is in her delusion.
Yes.
And that's subtle and clever. But you have to you have to give it a little grace to let it happen, because if you're trying too hard to figure it out too fast, you're going to see the things that are clues as flaws.
Yes.
Right. And then,
yes.
And then later you realize, oh, those were clues. So I have this theory that Rio, the Aubrey Plaza character wants Agatha to remember who she is. So I think she sent her, she couldn't like just rip her right out of the delusion.
Yes.
So she decided to guide the delusion into a detective character so that Agnes would be forced to uncover some of the clues for herself. And therefore, the clues would prompt an awakening. Because Rio couldn't, like, do it from the outside. So she had to get her to do it for herself.
Yeah. So, not knowing the backstory between the two, and I guess my question is, so Agnes, is in, you know, these poor people at Westview. Anyways.
Yeah, they've been through it. Yeah.
So I guess maybe a question I have for you is the backstory too, we get the Agnes part. Agnes comes, she doesn't remember who she is, her magic is gone. Is the connectivity to now her remembering everything, because is it based solely on the fact that Scarlet Witch, that the Wanda character, is dead? Because I was pondering this. Is that like, because now the, in theory, when you know, she was the rune, if you go back to WandaVision, the runes around the town, and
So maybe the events of the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness movie, it is left a little unclear at the end of that movie whether Scarlet Witch is dead or not. You know, she, and there's some people on the internet who think Wanda's still alive, but Scarlet Witch is dead. And I'm like, oh, that's messing with my head. Don't do that. But also in the MCU now, there's always the chance that it's Wanda from another universe. So that's also always out there. But there is something about, like, Scarlet Witch pulled the it's called the Wundergore or something like that. She pulled it down on herself. And maybe, yeah, some of her spell, the strength of the spell she had put on Agnes, is weakened as a result, making an opening where Rio was A, able to find her, and B, able to, like, you know, weaken the spell further and eventually break it. That's, I hadn't actually thought about that. I'm sort of ruminating it out loud right now.
So when you think about the story, so it was the Wundagore, Mount Wundagore, the Wundagore Darkhold Castle. The whole mystery, the murder mystery, was centered around what turns out to be Scarlet Witch. And we'll dive into the story of that. She's looking at the name of the book that got all burned, and the name of the book was Darkhold, the Darkhold, and that's the book that Wanda has at the tail end of WandaVision into Multiverse of Madness. It's the book that she destroys in every universe, which is why the fire was in there. And that's the castle, the castle, Darkhold Castle, and Wundagore, the Mount Wundagore, I believe it was called. She pulls that down onto herself. That whole, so as I don't know why I missed this, but she started to write Darkhold. I missed that the first time I watched it. So when she was watching the second, I was like, oh. And then you start paying attention to the dead body that was crushed. I mean, and then you look at what she was wearing. She's wearing that hoodie with the jeans, which is what she was wearing. Like, I just finished watching that episode. I was like, holy crap. Like, literally, is this?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, is this
the same outfit?
Is this a metaphor? Is this a metaphor, or is this real? Like, and the more I started getting intertwined into all that, and I'm like, okay, are they just trying to put that story to bed? And I don't want to give any spoilers to any movies. Although we did a podcast on,
we kind of just did.
But well, yeah. and just so, and this isn't a spoiler, I don't think, but if for those of you that have seen Deadpool and Wolverine or haven't seen it, there was a really there's a quick scene in that movie where you see a snippet of the statue that was in Multiverse of Madness. So there was a lot of speculation coming out of that movie. There's so much speculation coming out of the movie because it threw so many things against the wall, that they're slowly trying to rethread Wanda back into this. But there was the walk-up scene. Do you remember this, Penny, when they were doing their walk and talk, which I hope in some form or fashion they show, because they must have just been walking down the street, where Herb said to her, She's like, is she dead? And he said, oh, she most certainly is dead. And then she says back to him something like
you never know.
And then she winked at him. And I was like,
yeah,
I'm like, what are they doing to me here? Like, is she alive or is she dead? So anyways,
we're talking about magic. There's not the same rule.
And I just, so coming back to that first, the first like half of this episode, it's so well done because I have a feeling, because now the more we're talking about it, I'm kind of talking through it. I kind of want to watch it again because I think there's more to it than meets the eye. And yeah.
I think after we get a couple more episodes down the road, that we're going to start to see some of these details become relevant.
Yes, yes.
Like already, you know, the Jane Doe body had black fingertips, right? Wanda, when she did magic, her fingers turned black. And
so did Agatha's.
And then we see the kid has dark like ink on his fingertips, but is it ink or is it from magic? We don't know yet. And you know, the book, The Darkhold, and then she finds, you know, the librarian says, we have lots of copies of this book in natural sciences. And then there, it's like somebody like laser beamed through that section of the library, right? There's like a burn
with no explanation. With literally, she just walks up and I'm like, what the heck? Like what?
Like what? And it's like, nope, all the copies have been burned, which of course is what happened in Multiverse of Madness. And the Darkhold, so just a little background on the Darkhold, it's a book of magical spells that is so powerful. The spells are so powerful that the book takes over most users, and you have to be an incredibly powerful magic user to use the Darkhold and not become possessed by it. So Wanda is an incredibly powerful user of magic. She has chaos magic, whatever that means. And she's able to control the Darkhold. Agatha was able to control the Darkhold after centuries of developing her power.
Yeah.
The fact that Wanda could control it at like 26 years old is like a little insulting to other witches, but whatever. and in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they come across the Darkhold and
it
has various plot lines where the Darkhold like enables AI to like take over people's minds and stuff. It's intense. Okay, you just watched WandaVision again. Did Agatha have the Darkhold and Wanda stole it from her, or did Agatha tell her about the Darkhold and then Wanda went and found it?
I believe she told her about it. Yeah.
And then in that last scene, we see that Wanda has found it and she's reading it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's what we see at the end. She leaves perceptually, you think that she has gone. Yeah. She's gone to find it. Ironically enough, in Eastern Europe, where they found dirt. I'm trying to think. There was the scene in WandaVision where they were in the basement. And if that book was anywhere, it would have been in the basement. And the runes are in the basement. And I can't for the life of me. I'm going to have to rewatch that. There were some things in that basement. I can't believe the book was, though, because I think that had Wanda had the Darkhold book, which I think helps explain a little bit of the chaos magic, I think that she maybe wouldn't need to know what she was trying to find out from Wanda, which is how she was able to use magic the way that she was using it. And she ultimately
found it. And it's just Wanda has an instinctive control over this magic. Yep. And it's like going the other way around, right? Like Agatha and most witches study and practice and develop their power slowly over decades and decades. And Wanda had innate ability, had power thrust upon her by the scientific experiments that were done on her and her brother. And then she just wields power. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't know all the history behind it. She doesn't know actual witchcraft. So it's it must be so infuriating for a witch who's taken like 200 years to develop power to meet this like child who's way more powerful than you.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, well, like, It was just given to you. Like,
the power of that brief scene in WandaVision, where we get to see a little bit of the Agatha's backstory, where her coven, led by what I believe to be her mother, or maybe the leader of the coven, or both, which there were seven of them, by the way. I went back and watched the there were seven streams, but we'll get to that in a second. The whole point of that was to talk about her not understanding how to use the power. And, you know, that was 1693, right? So she had spent three centuries trying to develop her magic. And then out of nowhere, there is a witch who not only is using a lot of magic, but is literally has created a town with multiple plots, as she called it in WandaVision, that she just couldn't understand, even while she was living, quote unquote, next door as Agnes, in a story that was well told. And in some ways, that all got completely wiped away as she's in this town, not remembering anything, and of course, not having any magic. And, you know, watching this show where she literally doesn't use magic at all, not even for a little bit. The only people we get to see use magic, actually,
it's just Rio.
Yeah. No. Well, the teenager kid does some incantations.
Oh, he's chants.
Yes. Yeah. He's chanting while they're we think they're in the interrogation room, and it turns out he was just locked in her closet.
I loved her voice, and then her delivery of, so not so much an arrest as a kidnapping. Okay. Like, just and then the realization, wait, if you're real, that means, and that's when Rio, like, you know, attacks in full Aubrey Plaza, complete camp darkness. They have that amazing fight. And that's where the sexual tension really comes out, because Rio has these great lines like, oh, you want to be in control? You can be in control. And it's like, that's not about magic. That's about something sexy.
How about
there's just this powerful feeling between them.
You prefer me. And then she goes horizontal and then quickly follows it up in a grave. And then I was like, did she mean horizontal in a grave, or was that pause there for a reason? And then I was like,
yeah, that's a double entendre if I ever saw one. And I don't know if it was written that way or if Aubrey Plaza put that spin on it, but I love that it's there. It's fantastic. And the feeling between them, like I said, Buffy and Faith, it's this frenemies kind of dynamic where you get the sense that they know each other. Mm-hmm. They like, Agatha's like, you like this, and Rio's like, you want that. Like, they know each other. And that she was like, you want me to be formidable, you want me to have my power back. And Rio is like, okay, but hurry up, because other people are gonna kill you too. Like, she was right. Rio does prefer her with her power.
Yes.
Like, she doesn't want to defeat a helpless Agatha. She wants to defeat full bore Agatha.
And does she? So, and then I have questions about that too.
Does she want to seduce?
Well, does she want to be? There were a couple of weird little quotes. I mean, there's a lot left hanging. You know, they introduced characters, but if we're just going to focus on Rio and Agatha, you know, and again, she talks about, she kind of randomly mentions, Eastview, which I thought was interesting, and it didn't really click for me until watching the credit scenes. There was one little bit where they show Dorothy and the monkeys from Wizard of Oz in the credit scene, and then I was like, was that like, and I don't, again, I don't know where the show is going, but I thought maybe the Westview and Eastview, maybe the Wicked Witch of the West, and maybe there's
Wicked
some
Witch
of that
of the East. Yeah,
maybe there's a little play there. I couldn't quite figure that out, but I you know, I
yeah, the line, she is most certainly dead, or however that line was, that's a pull from Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
That's a Wizard of Oz line. That was very intentional. And so there's definitely going to be some Wizard of Oz references, and the sort of mythology in the Oz stories is that the Wicked Witch of the West and the Wicked Witch of the East are sisters, but also rivals.
Yes.
And that at one point they were friends with Glinda, and then they were on opposite sides from Glinda. I've always had an issue with Glinda. It's like, since I was a kid and I saw Wizard of Oz the first time, I was like, you had the power all along. What a B word. Like, I was like, that's just mean. You're just mean. I was like, you put yourself in a pretty pink princess dress with a crown and you float around in a bubble. That doesn't mean you're good. Like, your actions and your words tell me if you're good, not your like pretty face. And, I did theater when I was a kid, and I don't really have any interest in acting for real anymore, but the one role I have always wanted to play is the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah.
Because I feel this like kinship with her. Like, Dorothy drops a house on her sister and steals a family heirloom. Like, of course the Wicked Witch of the West has to like go after her. Yeah. That's like, what other choice does she have? And there's also this, I have this issue with like, pretty people are good, ugly people are bad. Like, come on. That's not how the world works. Like, you shouldn't assume that if somebody looks pretty, that they are a good person. Well, and you shouldn't assume that if somebody looks ugly, that they are a bad person. Like, that's not true. It's just how movies make it.
So that's your, you just said drop a house. And I totally forgot about that part. And then, of course, wow. The parallels now as we're talking this out that I hadn't thought of, because, of course, a house gets dropped on Wanda
on Westview. Which, yeah.
Well, it. The,
oh, yeah. yeah.
So, and I, as you, as we're talking, and I'm sitting here trying to figure out who the antagonist is and who the protagonist is. I'm not sure we've met the antagonist yet. I mean, I think they want us right now thinking it's Rio, but I think the connectivity between the two is probably going to be at play. And of course they mentioned the seven, what was it?
The Salem
seven,
which I assume is the witches that Agatha stole power from during the Salem witch trial days.
Yeah, so
there were
seven there, but, and who knows what they're going to do. I did a little bit of research on the comic book version of it. And I am actually not going to share that here because I do feel like, there could be some spoilery pieces to that. We'll probably talk about Nicholas Scratch here in a little bit, but because you know, she, again, another one of those things that threw me in that first like 40-30 minutes was when she looked into her son's bedroom.
And she's all sad, which again, this is another total trope from those detective shows, is there's always like some tragic loss, usually of a child, in the detective's backstory. And so it's a perfectly preserved child's bedroom, right?
Yes.
With like a teddy bear on the bed, and there's awards. And of course, she's a witch, so the wallpaper's all like celestial symbols. But it looks, at first glance, it looks like a kid's room. But then you're like, but no, there's like witchy stuff in there too.
Well, and do you remember the name of the rabbit?
Mr. Scratchy or Super Scratch, Sir Scratchy?
So
Scratch-a-lot?
Senior Scratchy, I think is what she called it.
Senior Scratchy.
So, and then I'm like, so was it her son? And is her son the rabbit? Or did she name this?
Yeah,
the rabbit.
I don't know.
So
in the comics, she has a son named Nicholas Scratch,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And so, I don't know if the rabbit is named for the son, or if her son has been turned into that rabbit. Like, I don't think we know that.
Well, if you go back to WandaVision, I don't think that it's her son, because if you remember that one scene, the rabbit is like sitting on a shelf and she's like playing with like a fly or a cicada or something like that, and she turns it into a bird and then takes the bird and turns it back into the cicada and throws it to Mr. Scratchy, who then eats it. So I think there's probably more to Senior Scratchy.
And I also feel like if you're if your son were turned into a rabbit,
yeah,
you wouldn't call it senior or anything. No. Right? You would, the name would still be, it would be Nikki.
Yeah.
Not Senior Scratchy. So it's some other, it's, but it's connected. It's definitely connected in some way because the son was named Nicholas Scratch. And then in the delusion, the son is clearly dead and she's preserved his childhood bedroom perfectly, which is a thing that people do on TV all the time. And I'm always like, don't you need that space? Like, like when I moved out to go to college, my brothers were moving into my room, like in my way as I was trying to move out. I was like, can you wait until I actually leave the house? And they're like, my bed's going to go here. And I was like, get out until I'm actually out. Yeah. Scratch, Nicholas Scratch. And there were like very little kid style drawings. And I don't remember now. And I didn't write it down. What was the award for? It was like, was it singing?
I can't remember. I didn't write
it
that down.
It might have been music. I think it was something musical. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, we'll have to. There was a lot to take in that room for sure. The pictures that were sitting right on the table and then right next to it, there were a couple of, I feel like there was an award and then there was like a, there was a newspaper article sitting there and there's just stuff everywhere. It's one of those things that as we go through the series, it might be worth coming back to because I don't think you put that scene into episode one without it coming back, like you mentioned. There's so many things that are going to come back.
It's like a whole room of Chekhov's gun.
Yeah.
Right? It's like all of this is going to mean something at some point.
And
it'll make sense.
There's so many gaps in her life. I mean, actually, her whole life, we know nothing about her other than her fake persona in WandaVision and then her perceived real persona at the end of that when she's trying to steal the power away from Wanda. Yeah. And now we're given this trope of, you know, another TV show and this trope of a dead son that we didn't know anything about. And I was like, we would know about the son. And then I'm like, I guess we wouldn't. And then I'm like, where the heck is Ralph? I was so hoping, you know, I was like, where's he at? I want to see him.
I hope he shows up. That would be really fantastic. What if we're referring to Evan Peters, who was in the WandaVision show as he was cast as Wanda's dead brother, but he was actually some like, I don't know, like drifter or something.
He was literally just the guy who lived in that house.
Yeah. And Agatha had moved in to just be like, I'm going to make this my house. So I'm next door to Wanda and I can spy on her. So it's still his house. So maybe he'll show up.
There has to be some connectivity to that, but wouldn't it be funny if, instead of him being there, who played Quicksilver?
Oh, Aaron, the guy who was actually Wanda's brother in the MCU.
Wouldn't it be funny if he lived there?
There's so many things they could do. Okay, so we do meet, there's a bunch of returning characters from WandaVision. We see Mrs. Hart, played by Deborah Jo Rupp, Dottie, played by Emma Caulfield, Jones, who does, I don't know if that's his first name or his last name.
That's all I have.
Played by David Langle. He's the police chief character and the one who like couldn't stop looking at naked Agatha. That was funny.
he starts walking, oh God. I just realized.
And his wife is like, come with me.
What are you
Herb,
doing?
Who's the neighbor who's constantly working on his flowers and his hedges. And who was the detective at the crime scene. David A. Payton is the actor. And Norm, played by Asif Ali, who was the jeweler and then the jogger. All of these people were in several episodes of WandaVision in these same characters. So I was excited to see them again. I was like, oh, I'm so glad that like, we're getting these people back. I love these. Some of these actors are favorites of mine. Like Deborah Jo Rupp is one of the funniest people.
She's amazing.
Working in Hollywood. She's so good. And Emma Caulfield, I have learned a lot about her since Buffy, that she's just a lovely human being. And I'm just happy to see her. I'm like, oh, Emma, hi. Like, I'm so glad you're getting work. Like, I know that, like, people like working with you and you're, like, a nice person. Like, I'm so glad you're here. It's like an old friend or something. It's crazy.
And she does, it's kind of funny, just the different roles in the short amounts of time that she's had in both series, how she has portrayed like four different versions of the same human, from Dottie, yeah. Dottie, the like boss of the whole neighborhood, to her real persona, which was Sarah being like mortified that she would never get to see her child again. We actually get to see her child. And not only that, but she's married to Jones, who I actually think that's his first name because his last name was different as the chief. He's very famous now. He's in a Miller Lite commercial screaming in the background like it is both instead of tastes great or less filling.
Oh, that's funny.
That's where I was like, I know that guy. I think he was in a commercial. But I Emma Caulfield is and then she's the librarian who is just pissed that Agatha is even like, she's like, you could tell wherever she's doing this, she's just like, I cannot believe I'm going through with this. Yes, it's over there. There's lots more. Next. And
yeah, like, oh my God, you used that line at the supermarket. Like, you can't just walk to the front of the line whenever you feel like it. And Agnes is like, only suckers wait their turn. I'm a real rule follower in life. And whenever people just walk to the front of a line, it makes me insane. When she did that, I was like, yeah, if I was the librarian, I would be like, go back to the back of the line. Like, that would have made me mad.
And now in hindsight, knowing that all of these people are just kind of putting up with her, and who knows what their fears are and why they were doing it, because obviously she who shall not be named is her mentioned. It's just sort of funny that for 3 years they've been playing this little dance with Agnes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess from their perspective, they probably don't know that Agnes has this other identity and is also a witch. So they just think she's a victim of Wanda's. Yeah. And they're like, oh, we all got our lives back, but apparently she didn't. We should make sure she's got food and stuff. Yeah. Like, they're just nice people. And Agnes is, you know, she's insane. And it's such a funny contrast that she's like this centuries old witch in this like whatever town in New Jersey, and the people have been like being nice to her. But I loved the jogger guy, especially when he like starts jogging toward her, he sees her naked and he like jogs backwards. He's like, I'm out of here.
Okay, done.
As opposed, something is going down.
As opposed to
Jones, I
don't want
to be a part of it.
Who tells his daughter she's like, get her inside. And then he starts walking towards Wanda before Emma Caulfield comes and grabs him back. It's really cool. I've always, you know, you want to talk about different levels of a multiverse. Like, this is kind of a fun little multiverse of just kind of insipidness, because these characters get to play a whole different, this is like a whole different series, because they got to play all of those weird, like silly, sitcom
versions of themselves.
So I get the impression maybe we'll see some more of these characters going forward, but I'm glad.
I don't think you cast some of these people without having something for them to
I think
I do know that we're going to see a lot more of Deborah Jo Rupp.
I think she, of all of the characters, she's the one who I'm most interested in seeing. We didn't get to see a lot of her in WandaVision. I think she was only in the first or second episode.
A couple little scenes.
Yeah. So it'll be fun to see her role kind of grow as the series goes. And I hope we see a lot more of Emma Caulfield as well. Like we're biased.
I love her.
She's great. She's great.
Okay. The teenager. Let's talk about the teenager. So,
I have so many questions.
Yeah.
I have just so many questions about why we don't know his name. Why don't we know his name? I would be like, why don't we?
Well, it's clearly going to be something. He's someone that when his name is finally revealed, it's going to mean something to us. And I have a theory about who he is. I know the internet has some theories.
Oh,
about
really?
Who he is.
There's a.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So either right now or at some point you need to spoil that theory, because I was watching and when I saw the fingers, I thought, oh, wait, they did
magic
that on
magic user.
What's that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magic user.
Yes. And then if he's going to be a major player in the show, I thought, I can't imagine this is just some random kid. And then I started trying.
I'll spoil it right now. The theory.
Spoil
is that he is some multiverse version of one of Wanda's kids. So Billy. She has the two boys, Billy and Tommy.
Yeah.
And one of them takes after her and one of them takes after her brother and has, so one has super speed, one has magic. And the magic one is, I think, Billy, right?
Yes, Tommy's Billy. The fast one. Tommy's the fast one.
Billy is the magic one. So this would be Billy, and his magic name is Wiccan. So I think that's who he is.
So
whether he is the Wiccan, the version who was in WandaVision, or he's from another universe or something else, I don't know.
Do you
but
know,
I think he's Wanda's.
In the comics, do these kids... I know I've read something about this at some point, like back when I was watching WandaVision the first time. Do these kids ever manifest in the comics? I don't know this story. Okay, so...
Yeah, I don't know the whole story, but I've done enough sort of like Wikipedia and comic book resources and those kind of like summary type websites to know that there are comic runs where her sons are alive and she mothers them and they grow up and they have their own powers.
Well, so the reason why this would be a big deal is obviously would be weird. Okay. So for a couple reasons, I would assume then we might get the other brother, right? At some point.
So.
And then if you bring back the brothers and there's a show called Vision Quest coming, then one can only surmise that this might be
they might show up there too.
This might be, and if they show up there, then maybe might actually have a happy ending for a character that people are really pissed off didn't get a happy ending.
Yeah. And also, you know, the MCU is doing this like Young Avengers thing.
Oh.
And Wanda's kids would fit in beautifully with that.
Yeah, that would be,
you know,
perfect.
They could team up with Ms. Marvel and whatever Kate Bishop's superhero name is, and America from Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, and like there's a whole group of these younger Ironheart and maybe even the new Black Panther. Like there's a whole bunch of young up and coming.
Whether it's
heroes.
The new Black Panther or the Black Panther's son, who's still at this point, I think, too young to be Black Panther. I think that would be a fun little And I think a direction that would be a lot of fun if you do it right. A show that I think the one thing that Marvel Comics has done really well over the years is find new versions of old staples. And by that, I mean groups. And, you know, the New Mutants when I was a kid, you know, came out right after the first Marvel superhero Secret Wars with a lot of youngsters. And some of those youngsters have gone on to become major characters. It would be a lot of fun to see in one of these next phases to see some of these younger characters have some leg room to grow in the MCU. And I think those kids rewatching the series, those kids were absolutely wonderful to watch. Like they totally carry the weight of a show where there were a lot of people carrying a lot of weight. This kid looks so much like that other kid. The only thing that I was hesitant was like, okay, so where's the brother? And I know the brother isn't magical, but I don't think they would bring one in without the other. So that's the only hesitation I have. And the Evan Peters thing, I cannot get out of my head. So they do like to throw something in front of you and make you think it's one thing and it turns out to be another. So
something else.
So I guess there really isn't a spoiler there but I'm so happy that that's what the internet is saying, because the black finger, the minute I saw the black fingers, and at first when I watched it, he said, oh, it's ink on my fingers. And I was like, okay. And then I was like, the second time I was watching, I was like, the second time I watched it, I'm like, okay, dumb Jim. Like, that's not what they were. So,
That's magic blackness. It's pretty cool. I think that we start to know more about him in episode 2. And I think that actor is quite charming. He has a really nice presence so far on screen. So I'm looking forward to spending time with him. I think he's very different from Catherine Hahn. And so, like, I don't want any of these characters to be like mini-me's of each other. So I want those two to clash a little bit and have contrast. I want Rio and Agatha to clash. I want, you know, I know these other actors that are going to be in it, like Patti LuPone and Sasha Zamir. Like, I can only imagine how all of those characters' chemistry is going to intermix and clash and contrast. And there's nothing more disappointing than when there's a show and you're like, these characters, you could just switch the lines in between them. They're interchangeable. Like, they're, you know, who cares which one of them said what? I don't think that's going to happen here. These are distinct, different personalities. They have different goals and needs. And I have a lot of faith in this writer, because WandaVision, the first couple of episodes of WandaVision, I was like, what am I watching? And it's weird and it's slow. And then it got faster and better and faster. And then once you get to like episode 5 or 6, suddenly episode 1 and 2 pop back into your head and you're like, oh, and they're better.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, well,
and it's worth it.
That's, you know, having just rewatched it, having already seen it. So the, you see those first two episodes again, very sitcom lengthy. They're, you know, 30 minutes in length on Disney, but you know, with the 6 or 8 minutes of credits, it literally was a 22 to 23 minute episode. They were done like 60 sitcoms, and they were done so that it seemed very frivolous, but it was, you didn't get a whole lot of other, you know, like there was really nothing else going on. But the minute you start like episode 3 and episode 4, when you start realizing, oh, there is an outside to this, and then wait, why is there an outside? And then the weight starts to build as you start to realize who all these other characters are and what's actually happening. That's definitively, but that's hard to pull off. And WandaVision did that very well. So it does feel like, I will say this about that young man. He, to sit across the table from Catherine Hahn is, and you know, I'm not trying to press upon the world that Catherine Hahn is, she's a fabulous actress. And I think she's just, I don't know how she's flown under the radar for as long as she has, as far as being, you know, I think she's in her 50s now. She was talking the other night on Jimmy Fallon about how her oldest son is a senior in high school and about ready to go off to college. So I just assume she's around my age. So like, she has been so good in so many different things, as we mentioned in the pre-show. It's hard to imagine that she's flown under the radar, but to watch her across from this kid, that kid's boots had to be shaken. He just hasn't been in a lot of stuff, and he holds his own.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be like the two kids who played Wanda's sons in WandaVision. Every scene they're with Paul Bettany, with Catherine Hahn, and they hold their own. So to get cast in a role like this, like, you know, you're going to get, and his first scene is getting tackled by Catherine Hahn or getting hit by a car from that 70s show actress, and then getting thrown into a interrogation room or her closet.
Depending on which version of the delusion you're in. Yeah.
And then sitting across from, you know, a scene stealer and having a great couple of moments where you realize that his character has weight. That's hard to do, which really gets me excited about this show, because we haven't really seen a lot of the main cast yet.
Yeah. There's so many more people to meet. And knowing who the actors are, I'm like just dying to get to know their characters, because it's such a fascinating collection of personalities outside of the character. So like, what's it going to be like when they're on screen together? One of the other things I wanted to talk about is the aesthetics of the show. You know, so far we've seen a really high quality of production value. You know, the mimicry of the small town murder mystery show was spot on, right? It was beautiful. The music, So the opening music, the opening song is a song called Ballad of the Witches. And I know for a fact that it's going to play a role as the show goes along.
Is that a real song, or did they create that song for the series?
It's created for the,
okay,
for the series.
Okay,
because And there's going to be different versions of it.
Okay, because, you know, of course, and they did it.
They've already released two versions on like Spotify and Apple Music. Oh, there's two different versions of the song already.
Because I almost searched it because it reminded me of the theme to Justified. And a show that I absolutely love.
And I thought it also was a little reminiscent of the True Blood theme.
Yeah. Song. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
So this one was performed by someone named Matthew Mayfield. And I went and tried to listen to his other music and my computer crashed and I never came back to it. But I am going to look it up and listen to some of his other music because I really liked his version.
The witches did not.
And then
they did not want you to hear.
I listened to the other version.
Okay. Oh,
I listened to the other version. It's the one we're going to hear in episode two.
Oh,
is very different.
Okay.
It's the same song, but very different. And that same song, the Ballad of the Witches song, she is humming it in the car on the way to the crime scene.
Because then they like, play like a slow. So because she finishes humming it. And then they continue playing it like a violin, like a string section version of it, almost an orchestral version of it plays. She stops. And as the car kind of pulls over, like you can hear it continue to play. Oh, that's the same.
Yeah.
See, I didn't know that was the same song because it sounded. Oh, but it sounded completely different because we haven't seen the real. Oh, how cool.
So there's going to be a bunch of different versions of that song, I think. And I've already heard two, plus the humming and the background music version. So it's an important song for the show. And I thought that the Matthew Mayfield version was really cool and I really liked it. And so, of course, I listened to the other version that was available on Spotify and I was like, oh, it's even better. So, and you'll see one of our listener comments is about the song.
Oh, man, that was.
Yeah, it's great.
That's great.
I thought the opening credits of episode one, which are very close to the Mayor of Easttown credits, were beautiful and so well realized. But the closing credits are amazing.
Yeah, I've got
with
some
all
notes.
The images of witches, like from pop culture and actual
so
history
much.
And medieval art and, you know, movies. There was like Fruza Balk from The Craft.
Yeah.
There was like the witch from Snow White
witch was there.
There were all these different
several
images. There was the witches that do the paddleboard like coven meetup in Salem, Oregon were there. It made me so happy. And then that song. Oh, I love Season of the Witch by Donovan.
And that was a great.
It's on like seven of my playlists. Yeah. It's got such a catchy rhythm to it. And when I went on Apple Music and I was just looking, I was trying to confirm who the song was by Donovan and I found a Lana Del Rey cover of it and it's awesome. It's awesome.
That's a song.
Season of the Witch.
There's been a lot of versions of that song. The original version, which is the one that they played in the episode, was fantastic. I will tell you that I didn't have enough time to like really dive through one of the opening volleys is that famous witch trial painting by George H. Walker that I've seen a million times. But the weaving of that with the Snow White witch, with the Wizard of Oz, not the witch, which is what really confused me. Lisa from The Simpsons portraying her witch. I noticed too.
And also like excerpts from books about modern witchcraft.
Yeah. Which I feel like
rituals.
We probably need to go back and pause and read. The tarot cards, in the form of the, what's the star called?
The pentacle.
I feel like that might have been important, but I don't know anything about tarot cards, which means if anybody's listening and knows a little bit, maybe go back and pause it on that screen because maybe that's some foreshadowing. I just feel like the brilliance of the WandaVision, like at closing credits. And then there was a moment too in the closing credits that had like it looked like you were watching it on a tube TV, which I think was an homage to WandaVision. And then, of course, at the tail end, we find out that the whole episode was modeled off of the Dutch version of
of The Killing. Yeah. great.
So it was like, this was the Dutch version of WandaVision or something like that. And I was like, holy crap, how brilliant is this? So, but I love that this show, as you talked about the song and me watching it just the second time and catching little bits and pieces of it. And that whole first, like I said, 30 minutes where they're mimicking Mayor of Easttown, which really hides a lot of a backstory. I think that this is going to be an episode that we go back and watch, even if it's just the credit, the opening, and then the opening credits too. They paid such a special attention to the police tape. There was the one thing that's like standing in my mind is that one, it's like going up a path with like the police tape right down the middle. Which stood out to me too.
I feel like that stuff's going to come back.
Yeah.
And we're going to be like, oh, wait, do you remember from the opening credits? So I agree with you that we're going to come back to episode one. Like, I think a couple episodes from now, we're going to have to rewatch episode one again and be like, oh, this has come back and that's come back and this was relevant. And, I think this is going to be a show that holds up well to repeated viewings.
Yes.
It's going to be one of those shows where every time you watch it, you get new stuff.
100%.
Like, I mean, that's what WandaVision has been for me. I've watched it like 4 or 5 times through, and I've waited like a bunch of time in between each rewatch and then gone back to it and been like, oh, there's a whole other like thing I didn't notice before. And that, or that I didn't appreciate the first time through. And it's the same showrunner. You know, this is a woman who has proven herself to be clever, to be meta, to be self-referential, to be respectful and loving of the source material, which is something I really
and
admire.
She, her interviews, the passion for the people that she got to direct and who got to help her film this is very reverential.
That's lovely.
It's and one of the favorite questions that I had that people asked her was, I can't remember what interview it was. It might've just been a random interview, but someone asked her like, how frustrating was it to have Marvel come like barreling into the middle of the show and say, you have to do this and you have to do that. And she was like, that never happened. She's like, we did our show. And then what Kevin Feige would do would come and look at parts of the show and would say, okay. And then they would go off. Most of his input happened pre-show. And she's like, it had no mm-hmm. impact on the story that she wanted to tell at all. And that, for somebody who's watched the weight of the MCU, which I love. I mean, you know, being a comic mm-hmm. book person, like finding those little Easter eggs has been fantastic. But the weight of 4 or 5 phases, whatever we're in now, and trying to tie everything together is great in a lot of ways, but it also can take away from the storytelling. And it does feel like if you liked WandaVision, the storytelling of WandaVision, that felt like a lot of threads coming together. It does feel like we have a lot of that. It also makes me want to watch Doctor Strange 2 again, because I do feel like this is going to enhance that viewing for me. I liked it. I didn't love it. I liked it. I didn't like it mainly because of how it ended. You know, I think I'm with a lot of people who wants to see that character, Wanda specifically, like have a better closure because of, as you mentioned in the pre-show, that she definitely has had, you know, I think a lot of these shows, these two shows in particular, deal a lot with grief.
Grief and
loss. And I feel like, and this is where, you know, Sam would be awesome on one of these shows just to kind of talk about that. But I think that I would like to see a character who's dealt with so much have a love story that has the type of event. She had to watch her brother die. She had to watch her parents die. She had to watch her lover die. And then she
had to kill her lover
and then watch him die.
I mean, it was horrible.
And her grief, you know, as horrible as it was, like, I think we can all understand her grief and that scream grief, that chaos grief that made Westview what it is for this show. I think is something that I hope we get to explore again. And it'll be interesting because, trying to figure out who Agatha is. She's got to find her power. And then we've got to find out, you know, what kind of character this is in this backstory that she has with specifically with Rio, but I think there's a lot more backstory of a lot of actors and actresses that we've yet to see that I'm really looking forward to seeing. So I just, I feel like I'm psyched. I only know 25% of the first episode. I have to watch the second episode though. So I haven't seen that yet, but cause now I just want to see it for the song.
Yeah. The song is so good. And the second version of the song is so good. It's so good. So we learn a couple of things, magic rules in the episode. There's one part where Agatha says to Rio, "You can't kill me. It's not allowed." Allowed by who? No idea. How is that enforced? No idea. But I'm fascinated.
Yes.
Another point, Rio is like, "If you want my powers, just take them." And Agatha says, "You know, it would kill me." I'm like, "Ooh, what does that mean? Why would it kill her? Like, that's interesting. I got to know more." Agatha says, "Let me get my purple back." And I'm like, oh, so purple isn't just her favorite color. It has some kind of meaning.
Yeah.
Magically.
Well, and if you remember, like, her coven was blue.
Yeah.
And she is purple. So, and of course, Wanda and Scarlet Witch
is red.
Is that red color. So yeah, now, yeah, colors mean something. We haven't seen what color that Rio is as a witch. So we've still got to look forward to that, which now I'm kind of excited about. Yeah.
That's really cool. There's open questions. There's that brooch that she finds.
Was that the same brooch that she had on?
I believe it was that she was wearing at the end of WandaVision. And it's, Maiden, Mother, Crone, which is, you know, in a lot of sort of Wiccan tradition. That's the three phases of the female goddess. Mm-hmm. And I loved her line. There's no professional working goddess. Because people like me who are not a maiden or a mother and aren't quite yet a crone, like, where's my role? But anyway. But there's a lock of hair inside it. Whose hair is that? Hmm. Whose hair is inside the locket? I want to know. What happened to Wanda's house? Because Agnes's house was next door to Wanda's house. Is Wanda's house still there?
Well, remember, so
it was magic.
So remember, her house was just a foundation that Vision had bought, and then she built the house with her magic, and then it wasn't there. So is there?
There's
now?
Not like I didn't see, at least they didn't show like an empty lot or anything.
No.
So I'm like, is the house there? Is it not there? I don't know. It's just an open question. And the Nikki thing, like, where is Nikki? Is he a dead kid? Is he an abandoned kid? Like, was he never a kid? Is it a delusion? We don't know yet.
And when was he a kid? Why does Agatha still look like she did in 1693? And when
she doesn't age, I assume magically she doesn't age.
And so what? He could be a kid at any point. I mean, that's 300 years.
He could have been her kid.
Right.
1720, 1830. Like, when did she have this kid? I want to know.
Well,
so there's all these open mystery questions. What is her backstory with Rio? Why do they hate each other but also seem to want to have sex with each other? I don't know.
Could the magic boy be her son?
Oh, that's also possible. He could be Nikki.
Oh, dear.
That would be wild. That would be wild. Oh, my God. I'm going to have to think about that for a little while.
Because that would be the twist, right? If the internet's talking about him being Billy, but there is no Tommy.
Yeah.
The twist would then be that she eventually finds out that he's like a manifestation of her son. What happened?
That would be amazing.
I don't. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just thinking aloud like this. Oh, now I'm going to have to. Darn it, Penny. I'm going to be up until 4 in the morning now watching the first two episodes back to back. So this is why this show, I hope that it finds an avenue for people to watch it, because I could see regular Marvel people who know all the main characters, who have seen all the MCU movies, and just don't look at this character. They look at this character to be similar to like a Jessica Jones, another series that I think was spectacular with a spectacular female lead who really was kind of a bit player in the comics. And I just want the show. I mean, because there's so many more questions, like what happened to Ralph?
I want it to find an audience. I have a feeling that it's going to be like WandaVision was, where I remember when WandaVision came out, the first couple of episodes, like diehard fans were watching it. People like me who were like, yay, a show that has a female lead, were watching it. And then around episode 4, all of the people who were watching it were like, it's way better than you think it is. You need to watch it. And then like the rest of the fandom jumped on board.
Yeah.
And I bet that's going to happen here too, is that there's going to be like waves of people watching it. I know a lot of our podcast family are watching. I've already like heard from people that are like, yeah, I've already watched the first episode. Like, I'll send in feedback. And they didn't, but they will. And I think that a lot of diehard Marvel fans are going to watch it. I think that Marvel has done a good job in the last, like, I don't know, 5 years or so of really advancing the female characters. And as a, you know, woman nerd, I really appreciate that, because for years and years and years, there was this myth that like women-led movies don't make money. No one will go see it. People don't like women-led movies. And then, you know, women-led movies have had to prove over and over and over again, like Barbie. Everyone was like, Barbie made so much money. I was like, what did you think was going to happen? Like, yes, of course it did. And I think that female-led shows like this, where the character is, she's not 20, she's not blonde, you know, she's not like a, you know, a bimbo. She's like complicated. She's smart. She's dark. She's like, at least our age, maybe, well, we know the character's like 300 years old. So like, it's just, it's richer. It's a deeper story. And I think it's the future.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping it's
fanatical about that kind of stuff.
The funny thing is, I mean, seriously, Penny, this character comes pouring out of her house stark naked.
It's so great.
We get a full-on butt scene. And the funny thing about it is it definitely so much wasn't the point that I didn't notice. I knew she was naked, obviously. But I didn't notice how naked she was in a Disney show. This isn't new. I mean, we've seen Thor's butt. And there was some.
Yeah.
But
this is the first female bare bottom in the Marvel universe.
Oh, okay. So
that's groundbreaking.
The whole scene was done so well because we were just trying to
wrap. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't titillating.
No.
It wasn't exploitative. It was very much believable that in that moment she would be naked, and that as a 300-year-old powerful witch, she would not care about being naked. That she would be like the guy gives her like a shirt and she just throws it on the ground. And I'm like, yeah, she doesn't want your shirt.
She's like, standing
she is
there
so above you.
She's standing there naked. And I think Herb says, not this exact quote, but something like, well, since you seem actually incredibly lucid right now. And I was like, just yes. So we're clear, she's naked in front of you. And
yeah, but you seem lucid. And he's doing that adorable thing where he's holding his hands. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to respectfully not stare at your breasts, but they are right in front of me.
He looks so just amazingly, awesomely uncomfortable, which is the way it should have been portrayed, as opposed to Jones, who was trying to walk closer. But that was so well done. And it was done respectfully. Respectfully, it fit very much into the show. And I feel like I read somewhere, and I tried to pour so much into that, that that was something that Catherine Hahn wanted to do, that it wasn't originally.
Yeah. The nude scene was her idea. Yeah. She was like, she should be naked in this scene. And then they talked about it and they were like, yeah, we can make that work.
Okay,
it's in our trivia.
I'm just laughing, it's in the notes.
It's so funny. So listeners, I had a trivia section written up in the agenda, but we've actually gone through all the trivia already. It's all come up, so we're gonna skip trivia this week.
I do have a couple of notes though, real quick. Love that they just kind of offhandedly threw a couple of moments where as Rhea was leaving, she was saying some Spanish to her, and what she was saying, she was walking past her and she said, and I, again, I don't know if this is anything more than just what it is, but she was saying te veo, which means I see you, which I thought was interesting. She said it twice on the way out. The first time it looked like Wanda didn't understand her, and the second time it looked like she did, which I thought was interesting. And then the only other thing that I wanted to mention was, and again, this just shows you the type of attention to detail that that I didn't really realize until I was actually mentioning to you that outside of all of the places I live are small little cricks. And as I said that the second time, when I was talking about the crick that's right outside my house here, I realized that she said crick.
Yeah, talking about,
and if you watched
the crime scene,
so she's at the crime scene. If you, I always watch things using closed captioning, and it came up creek. And I just remember the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, that's a really good detail, because that's exactly how people would say it. Because they were definitively trying to catch that certain theme. And I just, that's one little piece of how deep this show is. And I think that they did a really nice job of throwing the layers in without really trying to smack us in the face, but making us want for more, wanting for more for the fact that I'm now going to have to watch this a third time, because there's just so many layers that
so
I can't
many
wait
details.
To see. And I've not looked at hopefully some of the notes that we're going to read here in a second, bring up some of those too, because this is going to be one of those shows where I feel like in the coming episodes, people who call in, please send us emails and stuff. I think that we're going to find a lot more out from the awesome people who listen to our show.
Yeah. The one thing that we haven't talked about that I wanted to talk about is the scene when in the coroner's office, when Rio says to Agnes, claw your way out. And Agnes, she's clearly uncomfortable. Earlier in the episode, she has sort of rubbed at her neck and pulled at her collar. And that scene, she just starts pulling off layers of clothes. And then
how have
revealing
we not talked about this?
The different versions of herself from WandaVision. There's the 80s aerobics outfit with the giant perm and the headband and the leg warmers. And there's the 70s like Rhoda from the Mary Tyler Moore Show version. And then there's like
the Malcolm in the middle with the what did she like filthy or something on her butt?
Nasty or naughty or something like that. And then finally the black and white version, right? She turns black and white with the like perfectly coiffed hair, and that's the one that she finally bursts free from. And when she peels that identity off, then she wakes up in the sunny modern day naked moment. And I thought that was so beautifully realized, the idea that she was buried under layers of false personas and that she had to get free of all of them. And just the metaphor of pulling off like sweater after sweater after sweater, I thought it was beautifully realized. Yeah. I loved it.
And she handled it so well. If that was a movie theater scene, when she pulled into that black and white version of herself, that is the version that I always see in my head when we talk about her in WandaVision, that would have been the popping moment. And then, of course, followed by the levity of her pulling off all of her clothes. And then the realization of who she is. And the fact that her neighbors actually liked her.
Yeah,
which so is a nice twist. And if they're trying to turn her persona from being evil perceptively in WandaVision to at least curiously potentially the protagonist of this series, I think they're doing a really nice job of unpeeling, to pull out an old cliched metaphor of unpeeling an onion, because we're getting to see a whole lot of layers in one episode. This is one episode.
Yeah,
this is one episode.
Yeah, just the first episode. So there's so much more to come. All right. I think that we've basically covered as much as we can with the first episode, and we should move on and listen to some or read some listener feedback, and then you and I can both go and watch episode two tonight and start getting ready for our next episode of the podcast. It's the same thing I do on Cast of the Rings. We got screeners from Amazon Prime, and so we had episodes 1 through 7 delivered all at once.
Oh.
And so every time we would record an episode, both Anwen and I were like, off to watch the next one. Like, immediately, like, hit end on the recording, start watching the next episode. Because, like, we were dying to know what happened. They don't give anyone the screener for episode 8, which is the finale. Mm-hmm. So we will watch that with everyone else. But I have seen episode 7. I know what happens next. And I had friends here this weekend who were like, tell us what happens. And I was like, no, I believe firmly in not spoiling things. So I know what happens. So this Wednesday night or Thursday morning when you watch Rings of Power, I already know what's coming. Okay. Let's get into some listener feedback. Yeah. I'll read the first All one. Right. We heard from our good friend Becky Fenner Anderson. I had asked, in addition to what are your thoughts on the show, I said, who are your favorite fictional witches? And so Becky said, favorites are Phoebe, Piper, and Prue from Charmed. And I love them also. Oh,
so you, much. We talked about Charmed, but we didn't get the side note to Charmed.
Yeah.
One of the first things that Agatha says to Wanda is literally in episode 1, they walk up and she says to her, or I think Wanda says this to her. She goes, Wanda, Charmed. And I was like, ooh,
oh, they did that on that's purpose. Intentional. That's awesome.
Just one of those. I wrote that down to specifically mention for you and then forgot about it. So thank you, Becky, for throwing that in there because that brought that memory back. So Brad Holt says, these first two episodes were great fun. Loved the Mayor of Easttown homage at the beginning. Too funny. Definitely agree. Obviously, it threw me for a loop. Great performances and production values. Looking forward to the next 7 episodes. And in parentheses, and wondering when the Mephisto speculation will begin. Because who did they think was Mephisto? Oh, maybe it was Agatha. Someone they thought, who did they think was Mephisto in the...
In WandaVision?
Yeah. There was a lot of Mephisto speculation, but I can't remember now specifically what it is.
I can't remember either, so I'll have to look it up and we'll know for next time.
Yes.
Lara Willie Swink says, my favorite witches in film and TV, Nancy Downs from The Craft, Jadis the White Witch, especially Tilda Swinton's performance in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Helen Mirren's Morgana in Excalibur. That's a deep cut.
Wow.
Mommy Fortuna in The Last Unicorn. And of course, our Omega level witch, Wanda Maximoff.
For sure. Pake Allen, Pake, one of my favorite podcasters at Podcastica. So good, just a lot of fun, enjoying the rapport between Agatha and quote unquote teen, and that Down the Witch's Road song will need to be officially released and in my playlist ASAP. And Pake, good news. It is absolutely
two versions are available,
which I'm glad I didn't look up because I would have then heard the second one, which I kind of think is,
yeah, you'll hear it first in the episode, which will be good.
All right.
Yeah, it's on at least it's on iTunes and on Spotify, and Spotify has like all kinds of music. It's got a whole playlist of, I think it's both songs that are used in the show, it's the instrumental music that's on the show, and also I think it's some just like inspired by witchiness songs that are on that playlist. Alma Contreras says, I watched WandaVision when it first aired, back before I started watching other Marvel movies or shows, so I obviously did not remember too much. As I watched the first episode of Agatha, I wondered if I needed to have rewatched something prior. LOL, yes. I was a bit lost at first, but the show sucked me in, and I enjoyed these first two episodes. It does help a bit that I love witches. Am I right to assume that Wanda took Agatha's powers? Yes. And tossed her in some other dimension of the multiverse. No, not exactly, but put her under a spell. I'm intrigued and look forward to tuning into the cast. I hope that, Alma, that you've listened to our preview episode and that filled in a lot of that stuff for you. But if you have more questions, send them our way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Oh, yay. Oh, I'm so excited about this voicemail.
We got a voicemail from Anwen, my co-host on Cast of the Rings, and her lovely Kiwi accent.
Hello, Agatha All Along cast. Oh my goodness, I watched the first episode last night and absolutely loved it. I really enjoyed watching a catch-up video on YouTube just about all of the background that we need to know for watching Agatha All Along, and that was really helpful to bring me up to speed. just absolutely loved it. I love the pacing and I love the theme of it, her being, not knowing who she is and just being in this town and being this detective was fantastic. And the reveal was amazing. Absolutely loved the her going through all of her different characters from WandaVision until she finally strips off all of the layers and becomes herself again. That was absolutely brilliant, so well conceived, so well done on screen, and really set me up for thinking this episode is going to be, this season is going to be really, really cool. Quite a lot darker, I guess, than what we've seen so far, and I'm ready for it. Your question of the witch, the witchy question of the week. Question of the week, question of the witch. Who is your favourite fictional witch? My favourite fictional witch absolutely has to be Willow from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yay. I can't go past her. And if anyone has not yet seen season 6 of that show, oh my goodness, you'll see why I absolutely adore her. I hope that you have a good chat about this episode and I'll be with you throughout. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye, Anwen. Thank you so much. It's always good to hear from you. And like I said, she's my co-host on Cast of the Rings. She's absolutely brilliant and such a lovely human being. I love working with her.
I think that it's interesting to say, watch season 6. You are going to adore her. I think that, first of all, listening to Anwen say that.
That's pretty funny.
I buy,
you might want to watch season 5 and adore Willow before you try season 6.
And I guess, So, or just hang out with the Still Slaying podcast, and we'll take you
we
on
have
the,
a lot of fun
we'll take
there.
You on the journey over there, for sure.
All right, that's our show for this episode. Next time is episode 2, Circle Sewn with Fate, Unlock Thy Hidden Gate.
Very catchy.
Very evocative title.
If you want to join the conversation, you can email or send a voice memo to agatha@podcastica.com, and we'll put feedback posts up on our Podcastica Facebook page, or of course you can just find us at podcastica.com. Check out all of the places. They're wonderful places to be.
Yeah, the Podcastica Facebook page always has a lot of fun side chatter going on about shows, news in the sort of nerdverse, you know, what movies are coming up, what shows are interesting, who's watching what. There's just a lot of chit chat back and forth.
In a land of unsafety where people just sort of say things to not be nice. And I cannot tell you how much being a part of this crew has been. I mean, I've sort of been a part of it for 14 years, listening to it for 12 of those years, and then dipping my toes finally into the Facebook page, and then ultimately into the Zethead group. I cannot think of even a moment where we weren't just a group of friends, not only agreeing with things but disagreeing, and it's a wonderful place to be. So give it a shot, dip your toes.
And very diverse, very welcoming. People from all over the world are members of the Zethead group, and people are really respectful of each other's opinions. It's a great community, and I recommend joining it.
For sure.
The information to join the Zethead group, which is the Patreon sort of echelon of the Podcastica community, is linked in the show notes. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us. And until next time, I'm Penny.
And I'm Jim. Get witchy with it. It's really hard for me not to do that and do some rapping.
Getting witchy with it.
We'll be right back.
Did you know Tide has been upgraded to provide an even better clean in cold water? Tide is specifically designed to fight any stain you throw at it, even in cold. Butter? Yep. Chocolate ice cream? Sure thing. Barbecue sauce? Tide's got you covered. You don't need to use warm water. Additionally, Tide Pods let you confidently fight tough stains with new ColdZyme technology. Just remember, if it's gotta be clean, it's gotta be Tide.